Initiate Cowrat Podcast.
So I just thought this was funny on Facebook on the Reform Sage, which I follow. We've talked about before. He posted he put up a question: which Bible translations do you refuse to read? And my cousin, he said King James. And then I made a comment. I said, I beseech thee, pray, tell why thou dost refuse KJV. If thou dost not tell me, I shall not reckon it a great matter betwixt me and thee, and we shall remain friends as before time.
Nice. That's awesome.
And then he gave me a big laughing face, and he said, OMG, I love you, cousin.
And said, exactly.
Yeah, right. But I was like, I just started writing that. Okay, I'm going to pull out every weird word I can remember from the...
Oh, man, that John Banyan, that Three Little Pigs, you've seen that, haven't you?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, that is awesome, the Shakespearean Three Pigs. Yeah, so if you've not seen that on YouTube, go look it up. John Banyan, Three Little Pigs.
All right, what are we talking about?
We are talking about raising our kids, and specifically our sons, and just some of the things we found helpful or things that we've done, things we've read, whatever, to... trying, since we don't know everything, and absolutely nobody is perfect. There's almost no point in even saying that.
But right.
Any assistance we can get in getting clued in sooner about more things to help us raise healthier sons so that they grow up to be healthy men.
Because
as the saying goes, what is it? Better to raise a healthy boy than to repair a broken man or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's very true. It's much better to raise them as better than you can. Instead of them trying to undo everything you didn't do when they're adults.
Yeah, I remember when I was in high school at some point, it kind of occurred to me, kind of looking around, like you get to know other kids in school, and as you get older, kids start having more issues, you know, they can get pretty bad. And I started noticing a difference between the way I thought and believed and lived. I feel like I'm sounding like I'm bragging on myself.
Just notice you're different.
I blame it on my parents and God. I had nothing to do with it. But yeah, I just started to notice. I mean, why are these kids getting drunk and going to jail and getting in premarital issues and getting pregnant and all this? Like I'm just not drawn to any of that. I started analyzing it and I realized, I'm like, I guess I had a really good upbringing, even though there's plenty of things I had to complain about and plenty of ways I thought my dad was unfair and too strict. And, I mean, there's definitely things, again, as we said, nobody's perfect. There's definitely things that I've remembered, like, I do not want to do with my kids the way my dad did that with me. But there are a lot of things I do want to say, yes, I'm so glad.
That's awesome.
That my dad did that, and I want to make sure I remember that when I'm raising kids. But I remember, and I told him, I said, Dad, I feel like if kids were raised the way you and Mom raised us, they just have a lot less problems. I just kind of said it in the middle of a conversation.
Yep.
And then I just overheard him talking to somebody or something, but he said, and then it hit him, like, my teenager just told me I'm a good parent. Like, what is going on?
Right? That's awesome.
Yeah, so.
Off the record, I honestly wondered about that, because your dad could be abrasive. Like I said, this offer, and I thought, I wonder if Tim has resentment. I mean, I could see where I maybe could, just some of. But you that's great that you came away with a longer list of things of, I want to do what he did, than you did, I'm not going to do that. That's awesome.
And I don't know which list is longer.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I've never tried to think of it that way.
Sure.
I just know that there are some major things in my mind that are on both sides, both lists. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I don't know, God has moved me as I've grown up. God has moved me toward forgiveness, you know. Story of the poor servant, the indebted servant.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the king forgave him whatever.
Millions of dollars.
Yeah,
in
multiple
dollars.
Lifetimes worth of earnings.
Yeah.
And then he refused to forgive a day's wages or whatever it was to one of his fellow servants. Yeah, and I've just always thought of that, like, forgiveness is hard, but it's just like, how can I hold on to things? And I remember there was another time that it hit me, like, how hard my dad had it.
Yeah.
His dad left him when he was 14 years old, and he grew up in the Great Depression.
Yeah.
It was 1944, I guess, because he was born in 1930. It's 1944, his dad. So just imagine how the expectations on families and women and wives and, you know, mothers back then, it wasn't normal to be a single mom. And she had six kids at that point.
Yeah.
And he had told me stories about how his dad treated him. And of course, it goes back, you know, generations, I guess. But point being, it hit me like how I understood some of the ways that my dad was that I thought were unfair, overly harsh, or just not right. And I realized, I'm like, he had a bad childhood in many ways, and he was still broken when he was raised.
He didn't wake up one day and said he wanted to be that broken.
Right, right.
Nobody does.
Yeah, and I saw all the way up until the day he died that I could look back and say, he's not that way anymore. In certain ways, the way he used to be.
Awesome.
Like God was still growing him up.
That is really kind of the why of the things we're going to talk about. It's like, that's the kind of thing we want to, we hope by God's grace we do better.
I never felt good enough in my life. From the time I was a kid, I always felt stupid. I felt weak. I felt like I wasn't cool. And me and my couple other friends as growing up, I was like, well, they're uncool like me, so that's why we're friends, I guess. And, you know, I had sin issues that I always felt shame and guilt over, and I could never seem to overcome. And those went into adulthood, and I always just felt like I would just pray, like, God, I have no idea how to raise kids. I want kids. I love them. I want to be a good dad. From the time I was probably in junior high or earlier, I always like knew that I wanted kids and cool. I wanted to be a dad. Actually, that's where I met my wife too, was in junior high. So she was kind of part of that plan. In my mind, I never knew it would actually happen. But so I always kind of had just this fear, like I didn't like the stuff that I went through that I wished, hoped my kids wouldn't have to. I always thought, like, I don't know how to help them. I don't know how to prevent it. I have no advice for them if they run into the same kind of issues I'm having, because I still haven't figured it out. And I don't know, maybe I guess that was, to a certain extent, that's God used that. Predestinate, we'll say. No. It was all part of the plan.
Made the best of it.
Right.
Turned it to good.
Right. But that, I guess, I didn't see it this way at the time, but I just fully relied on God. I'm like, I don't know. Now, it wasn't from a heart of, like, faith. Like, if I rely on God, then everything's going to be great. It was like, the only hope I have is God, and not hope as in full of faith for the future, but hope as in, I'm crossing my fingers. I don't know if this is going to work, but it's the only thing I got, so we'll see. And I felt like I probably didn't pray enough, but I would just pray for my kids, and I'm like, God, raise these kids. I don't know what to do. I know how to have fun with them. I felt like I knew how to make them know that I loved them and connect with them, but I don't know how to teach you to be a man, because I don't feel like I know how. And that just bothered me. So I took him to church, took him to Sunday school, and I'm sure that was big parts of it, but just did the best I could. One thing that I learned from a mutual friend of ours, Jim Snyder, I saw him with his kids, and I saw him apologize to his son. He was probably 7 or 8 at the time, and I thought, what is this? A dad apologizing to his son? Like, that's something I never saw as a kid. And just on that note, I think that was from, and I heard my dad talk about this with other people, like, he didn't want his kids to see any of his failures because he didn't want them to learn from that.
Yeah.
And so the motivation was good, I think.
Right.
It took me a long time to finally realize my dad did have flaws and he wasn't perfect, you know.
Right.
Eventually, I realized, like, oh. Like, I remember when he first told me that he had trouble in school, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. Because all I heard from him is, like, you got to do better. You got to focus. You got to pay attention. You got to do your homework. And I just thought, this is how he is.
Right.
Like, he's perfect in all of these things.
Yeah. You know, he's just going, I know what not to do. So do this, because I know I didn't do that.
Right. But I seriously had this image of my dad being a perfect student and a perfect son growing up, because he would tell us all this stuff how to be. And like, I can't do this. I'm not that good at it. I guess he is. I don't know. Anyway, so I saw him apologize to his son. I don't even remember what the issue was. But, you know, he said, sorry, I was wrong, and I need your forgiveness. And I was just like, this is amazing. I feel like this is good. This is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I made a mental note of that. Like, and I'm sure at some point along the way in church and sermons and whatever, I know I've heard people talk about it. I used to listen to Focus on the Family every day and Family Life Today, two good Christian radio shows on raising kids and being a mom and dad, father, husband, wife, all that. And they talked about that at one point on the show, that you need to teach your kids how how to repent,
yeah.
how to admit that you're wrong,
right?
And not just to someone else, but to them. Like, if you wrong your kids and you realize it later, don't let that go by without saying something.
Non White talked about that. I forget which time it was, but one of the times he was up here, was sharing about that, and he said the same thing. It's like, you blow it and do something dumb, it's like, ask for forgiveness, it'll be all right.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome that you thought your dad was amazing.
Right. Which, to a certain extent, your kids should look up to.
Right. But for them to understand that, knowing that we're imperfect, doesn't give permission to go, well, I don't need to try then, but to realize, okay, he's going to make mistakes, but he tries to make good on them.
Right. Yeah, your kids should see you admit that you're wrong, apologize, ask forgiveness, humble yourself. Even humbling yourself to a 5-year-old.
Right.
Because if you did them wrong, then it doesn't matter how old they are or if they're your underling or whatever.
There's a psychology term for whatever personality is that, where you never, ever apologize, never admit being wrong or failing. And anyway, it has a label, and there's a reason it has a label. And there's right. a reason that you should ask for forgiveness or admit wrong when right. you make mistakes.
Yeah, there's a guy that I used to work with, and long story short, he and I were miscommunicating, not agreeing, trying to just, and we were on a time limit. We were looking at the clock like, we got to finish this. He was trying to explain to me how to do it. I wasn't getting, I don't know. And we were both getting more and more frustrated with each other. And we started talking over each other, talking louder, interrupting, you know how that can go.
Yep.
And just the frustration growing quickly. And all of a sudden, I had some stuff in my hand. He grabbed out of hand. And he just whipped it across the room and goes, just effing do it! Only he'd said the word. And yeah. this stuff goes flying everywhere. And he screams so loud, everybody in the place was like turning their heads like, what is going on? And I'm like, I guess this conversation's over. And I just walked yeah. away. I'm like, we're done here. And I didn't want to look at him. I didn't want to talk to him until we were both calmed down. You know, whatever. So I just went somewhere else. I'm like, whatever, you can do it yourself. But then, I don't know if it was an hour. Oh, the boss came over right away. Like, what's going on? And I'm like, talk to him. I'm out of here. I can't be here near him anymore at this point. Which I'm sure he felt the exact same. But I don't know. It was maybe an hour or two later. He came back to me and he said, I'm sorry. That was absolute garbage the way I treated you. And I was shocked. I'm like, this is not a common thing.
No, it's not.
In the workplace or anywhere.
Yep.
Then I respected him more after that than I did before the incident.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is a good guy. Kind of like we were talking, was it at church just yesterday? Pat was talking about King David, and he's like, he was a man after God's heart, even though he screwed up royally.
Yep.
Huh, that's funny. He was the king royally. Anyway, screwed up. Really bad, adultery, murder, yet God said he was a man after God's own heart.
Yep.
It was because he was humble and repented.
Yep.
He knew how to come back and admit he was wrong.
and pursued God instead of ran away from him.
Right. He had a heart for God ultimately, even though he screwed up more than once. His heart was always for God, yeah.
I mean, a huge thing that you did right with your kids, like I said, there's maybe things you didn't do, but by engaging with them and doing specific things as a way to show them that you love them, be involved with their lives, that carries a lot of weight with them just to feel okay in life. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, my dad likes me.
Right.
And he does stuff with me, so they don't feel alone, like they got to figure out stuff on their own because Dad never engages with me. Dad never does anything with me.
Mm-hmm. That actually reminds me where I first heard a concept on that point. Again, I was listening to Focus on the Family or something, and there was a guy, but he said he had counseled father and son relationships for the most part, or at least child and parent, whatever. And he decided to do his own study, I guess. And he interviewed or had people fill out surveys or whatever, like thousands of people. And point being, he looked at all these results, and one of the main questions he was looking for was, if not the main question, what causes a child to reject their parents' teaching and beliefs? And what causes the opposite? What causes a child to hold fast to what their parents taught them and never, like, stray from it? And he discovered, at least with his research, that was if a kid knows their parents love them, not because their dad said it a few times or whatever, but they know it. Somehow they know it inside, like their parents showed them, then I believe what they say is true. And obviously that's not a
right.
simple equation in life, but...
But that's huge, because
yeah.
as a Christian trying to raise them a certain way, that's the main thing you're hoping for, is that I hope I can convey my beliefs to them so that they become their own personal beliefs.
Right. Each person has to have their own relationship with God. You can't get to yes. heaven on your parents' faith.
Correct.
the youth group that we went to, the youth pastor, he was preaching one time, and he was talking about how, like, he would pray so hard that his kids would believe in Jesus. And he had just had a new baby, and he's, like, started, like, crying, like, real tears. He was like, God, I don't want my children to be lost. Please save my baby, you know? Yeah. And that hit me.
Yeah.
So I was saying how if a child knows that his parents truly love them, then they're more likely to believe what they say. And so that, again, that was another point. And this was early, like when I had very young children. Like, okay, mental note, let's not forget this. Like, yeah. Again, nothing is a simple equation. You can construe something like, okay, if I make sure I do this and this, everything's going to be fine. Like, obviously, right. That's not what it is. And of course, I already loved my kids, but it just made a thing like make sure they know it.
Yeah.
Because I think it's easy to forget to communicate that.
Yeah, right.
And as guys, I guess it's probably harder to be emotional. One of the things I got in the habit of doing a little bit, and I didn't even know, I'm like, is this weird? Is this helping? But when my kids were really little, both my wife and I would pray for each kid, you know, individually every night before bed. And, you know, I'd say, I love you, good night, you know. And sometimes I would say, I love you. And they'd say, I love you too. And I would say, do you know that? They're like, what? Like, do you know that I love you? Yeah. I'm like, how do you know? And sometimes they'd be like, I don't know, because you told me. Like, whatever. Yeah. And I didn't know what I was even looking for, but I just wanted to make a point, like, do you know that I love you? And how do you know?
Yeah.
Whether I'm trying to find information or just highlight that in their head. And one time, my youngest, and he was probably 5 at the time, 6, something like that. And so I did that with him, and I said, do you know that I love you? And he said, yeah. And I said, how do you know? And he said, because you're my dad. Like, duh. And I thought, okay, whatever. Of course, that's every dad loves their kid, right? And I'm thinking this. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Not everybody can say that their dad loved them.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I were to ask random guy on the street, like, isn't it obvious that your dad loves you? Somebody might say, absolutely not. I never thought that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so then why would my kid just be like, well, duh, it's obvious. Like, I guess in his world, that's the way it is. First, I thought it was kind of a silly, shallow answer. But the more I thought about it, I was like, no, that's pretty deep.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. That's what I'm looking for.
That's a good answer. Yes, exactly.
And so another great help was, and this might get more people disagree and touchy
contentious,
subject.
Contentious. Yeah.
This could be contentious, but... if anybody knows who Michael and Debbie Pearl are, do you know who they are?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Did you read their book?
Yes.
Okay. So we were given the book To Train Up a Child. Some people might be horrified, I guess, to know that we read that book. So it talks about discipline. I don't know. I can't think of anything that I would say, oh, that's just absolutely wrong. But I thought it was a good book. I guess if you take it the wrong way, I guess it could make you a bad parent. But
or use it as leverage to really lay into something you're already predisposed to for not the right reason.
Right, right. Yeah. When discussing disciplining kids, people are like, oh, no, don't beat the kids. Like, well, like you have something totally different in your mind than I do when we talk about spanking. I'm not you, Rick, but
right, right.
Some people that I know, I'm like, there's no way we can communicate about this, because like, what word do I use to convey a swat on the butt that leaves no
consequences? That's a popular one. Consequences.
Right. Anyway, I didn't want to go too much into this. Point being, one of the things that the Pearls, and we got their magazine, they had a monthly, I think, magazine for a while. We got their magazine. And one of the things, and I think it was in the book too, but one of the things that they said was like, you can't just discipline and make kids follow the rules, and that's like all you need to worry and think about as a parent. It's like,
yeah.
And they called it tying strings, I think. Yeah. Like, make sure that you're making meaningful connections with your kids, like where they know that you love them and they know that you want to be with them and you want to spend time with them and you like them.
Yeah.
Make sure that you're making a point on purpose
to
do that kind of stuff. Not just make sure that they're obedient.
Yeah. My issue, I always thought of it, was it's not enough to tell them what not to do and to give them consequences for when they mess up. If there's something you don't want them to do, what's your alternative? What can they do?
Yeah, yeah.
And affirming them and conveying love as much as correction. The correction being because you love them, because Proverbs was full of it with the ways of the fool and all these different things. Like, you can see kids that fit in those descriptions with Proverbs talking about the rod driving foolishness from the child.
It's,
if they just left to just go crazy and do whatever they want, that's how they train themselves. They've trained themselves then to act that way, to continue to act that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not real world. You can't live like that in the real world.
Right.
And more so these days, you actually can get away with some of it, which is why right. everything is insane. But
it's all about protecting the criminal at this point in society, it seems like. Making sure that we're not... That reminds me, it's kind of a side note, I guess. Listening to Jeff Durbin, he was preaching on the Old Testament law, as in like the civil laws. You know, if you have a hole, a pit on your land, cover it so someone doesn't fall in. And if somebody does, here's the penalty. And, you know, here's the penalty for murder. Here's the penalty for theft and all this, you know. He pointed out that it specifically says when you are carrying out the civil punishment, whatever you want to say, consequences, to a convicted criminal, do not pity them. Huh. Like, God thought to say that. You could take it the wrong way, just as with everything, but I take it as, like, make sure that... Oh, and it said something like, don't pity them because he's poor, and don't, you know, like, okay, so some poor guy steals and he gets caught, and it's like, don't say, well, he's poor, so maybe we should go easy. And I'm like, sorry, he broke the law.
Right.
Like, there's other ways to help the poor, right. not allow them to be criminals.
Right, you know? Exactly.
But either way, I just thought that was, I never noticed that in the Bible. I've read the Old Testament, I don't know, 3 or 4 times, most of it. But I don't ever remember that one.
Yeah.
But it said specifically, do not pity the criminal when you are about to carry out his punishment.
Yeah.
Because that can go wrong, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with feeling bad and like wishing he hadn't done it and wishing you didn't have, but don't let it lighten the punishment or whatever that is needed for justice.
Right. There's no replacement. I like that story Tim West tells about his dad pointing out in that moment that they saw this kid. I don't even remember what, if it was actually a cop at that point dealing with a cop, but he, mm-hmm. his dad pointed out to him that if he doesn't respond to his parents telling him no, then he starts running into situations where his teacher has to tell him no. Mm-hmm. And if he's not responsive to that, then he has to deal with the principal. And if he's not responsive to that, you're talking about over the course of life where the pattern of not obeying, not doing what is expected, not following the rules, the law, after the principal, the next higher authority in life you end up running into is the police. And if you don't respond to them, then you'd be dealing with a judge, mm-hmm. and they'll be sending you to jail.
And then you're dealing with the warden.
There's all these opportunities along the way to deal with the word no,
mm-hmm.
to obey, to respond to correction. Because if you just keep pushing the boundary of what you'll respect, ultimately you end up with the judge and you end up in jail. He said it so much better, but
right.
I thought it showed a great progression of the different levels and times over time that we get to learn to follow rules, obey laws, things like that. When you're talking about the that it's not a matter of, well, you just do these certain things and everything should work out okay as far as parenting. But there are certainly some helpful things that can help guide you if you can make a point, kind of touch points along the way. The Raising a Modern Day Knight book that we went through, author is Robert Lewis. When we went through that, the full-blown thing they have a workbook and they have a chart that shows the timeline of the things that a child should learn at what ages. Like at this age, they should see that you love your wife, that you love their mother. There's just a number of different things that they list out and kind of show it at what age. And those are just helpful things. You just refer to them just at a glance even to go, oh yeah. Help you see things that if you're just in survival mode, crunching through life, it's like you just ain't got the mind space to think about it. It's those kinds of things that can help you go, oh, yeah, I should make whichever ones kind of jump out to you, you know, especially they go, okay, I really need to do that, that you would otherwise never think of.
Right. Yeah, I remember that chart. I had it up on my bedroom door at one point. And obviously, again, every kid's different. Everybody, life is different, but whatever. But it is kind of a general guideline, rule of thumb, that
yeah.
at this age, this is an important thing to be showing your kids talking. And then at this age, this is a different thing that's important. And I thought that was really helpful. Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing I always say it's pointless to say, like I said that in church a couple months back about we should just not even use the phrase, I'm not perfect or they're not perfect.
Yeah, right.
Because it's meaningless. It's a meaningless reference point because none of us are perfect. So let's right. just not even pre-qualify anything with that. But the reason we do things like read books, which I would recommend this Raising a Modern Day Knight by Robert Lewis, I found the majority of the stuff in there scriptural, made sense.
Mm-hmm.
The goal of it seemed clear and scriptural. It's things like that that can help us see things beyond what we can see by ourselves. You know, the saying that it takes a village to raise a child. I'll just simply say it takes a house of faith to raise a child because you help each other see things that individually we can't see.
Mm-hmm.
That's the scary part of kind of being Lone Ranger Christian or where you shun input from others. Yes, they should be people that you can see that you can trust, and they seem to be living a healthy life that has godly fruit in the things they do and their children and things before taking their advice. But that's why we need each other to help see behind us, because we can't see behind us.
Yeah, I remember probably late high school, early college, maybe somewhere in there. Just, you know, and again, mindset time, like, I'm a failure. I'm not a good Christian. I want to be, but I can't. I don't know how, and I can't. All I can do is sin, and I'm not good enough, whatever, all this. And just sitting in church one day, and that's just always what went through my mind. Most church services, I just thought about how terrible I was and how other people were better than me, you know? And just sitting there dwelling on this, you know, it's basically just Satan talking to me the whole time and me swallowing it up. I don't even remember what the whole thought process was or what the internal conversation was. And looking back on it, I'm pretty sure this was God interjecting. I remember having this deep conviction, like, whatever happens, wherever you go in your life, whatever deep darkness you get into, whatever depression, whatever, do not separate yourself from the people of God.
Yeah.
You need to be at church. And I just remember that hitting me, like, okay, however bad it gets in my mind and my life, whatever, I feel like that is a lifeline that I cannot let go of.
Yeah.
And it was. It absolutely was. And there, and I kind of discussed this, I think, in episode one about, like, I got just so done with the struggle of trying to be a good Christian that I just gave up all effort. And I'm like, I'm done. I'm just not going to even try anymore. But the one thing that I didn't give up was going to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
And again, not that it's some legalistic, like, well, God will like you better if you go to church. That's not the point.
Right.
It's that I was still hearing the word of God preached. I was still being encouraged, or at least had the opportunity to be encouraged.
Exactly. Exactly.
People would try to encourage me, but it would kind of bounce off. At least it felt like it. But the absolute turning point came from a guest speaker at church. I would not have been there. I would have not have heard him say that.
Yep.
And I don't even know where I'd be. My assumption is that I would have continued the downward spiral. And honestly, at that point in my life, the only reason that I kept going to church was because I didn't want to be a bad example to my kids. I thought, well, maybe God has something for them, but even if he has nothing for me. Mm-hmm. And maybe they can hear the word preached and it'll be faith, you know, turn into faith for them, even if it doesn't for me. Like,
yeah.
And also, I didn't want people saying, why aren't you going to church? I didn't want that either.
You didn't want the conflict.
Exactly. I mean, it would have been from my wife and my parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just, like, quietly gave up. I didn't even talk to anyone about it.
Big struggle period where I struggled in my life as a believer, I didn't stay in fellowship for a period. And I attribute the issues I had during that time largely to the fact that I wasn't in fellowship and I wasn't around others.
Mm.
I wouldn't want to say peer pressure, because then that's not necessarily a scriptural concept, but
Spur one another on.
But spur one another on.
To good works. That's
bad company corrupts good morals. So the converse is true. If you're around others, you're at least not being encouraged to degrade.
Mm-hmm.
And good company, you could say, is potentially encouraging at least. I just felt this phrase one time with one particular friend, with our interactions and the things that we give each other permission to do, so to speak, by how we spend our time together and things like that, is to not encourage one another in wickedness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like being around somebody who is also a Christian, but to witness them doing something that's not productive or flat out sin, it could encourage you because they're a close friend. And so it's hard to go against that.
Mm-hmm.
But to agree, we're not going to strengthen each other in wickedness. We're going to strengthen each other in righteousness, which actually, you know, the Friday night music thing that we do, as far as what we listen to for music, that was the exact same thought I had with that. As far as what we would or wouldn't listen to was, you know, if we're going to take the time and spend time together as believers, let's at least try to do it with material that's encouraging and not stuff that potentially brings us down. We're going to invest that time. Let's encourage each other in righteousness.
Right. Yeah, speaking of music, that was another conviction from very young when I first started getting into music and buying CDs and stuff. Actually, it was cassette tapes first. I mean, one of the first ones I got into was Weird Al Yankovic. But other than that, and Ray Stevens. My dad was into Ray Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
Which he's a Christian, by the way. Or at least I've always been under the impression that he's a Christian. When you listen to music, if you want to memorize something, and have it go through your head over and over and over. Just put it to a song.
Yeah.
And a good beat, a good melody, a catchy, really catchy tune.
Yep.
And then you can, that message will just be driven into your head whether you want it to or not.
Exactly.
And so I always thought, like, okay, so why would I want stuff that's pulling me away from God or glamorizing the world and sin? And even if it's not sin or bad, like, it's just not focused on God.
Yeah.
It's just fun and entertaining, but doesn't really have a great purpose
right.
other than that, you know. And there's plenty out there that is pulling you down. And, you know, I would, on the school bus, I would hear all the popular secular music. And at some jobs I had, they had that stuff. I'm like, whatever, I'm not scared of it or something.
Right.
But if I'm going to push play on something, it's going to be Christian. That was just my rule for myself, you know.
Yeah.
Like the Bible says, whatever is good, whatever is holy, whatever is pure, whatever is
lovely, of a good report, think on those things.
Think on these things. Like, well, if I'm going to fill my thoughts with something, and even if it's for the purpose of entertainment, like, why not have it be good and pure and holy? And and there was a time, there was a certain Newsboys song that I would skip because it was just too convicting for me.
That's impressive.
It's like, I listened to their other stuff, but I would seriously press fast forward on the cassette tape at that time.
Like,
I can't listen to this song and live the way I'm living. I can't do it.
Wow.
It was a song talking about boy-girl relationships.
Did you have stories or specific trips or anything like that with the boys at all that you were thinking?
Yeah. Me and my brothers were in Boy Scouts, and my dad was heavily involved. He didn't just drop us off and pick us up. He was at, I think, all of the meetings, which were weekly. And so if you've ever been in Boy Scouts, you go camping a lot, multiple times a year, every year. Some just for a weekend, some for a week long. And I absolutely loved it. I loved camping growing up, you know, sitting around the campfire and whatnot. So that's my experience with camping. So when my boys were getting old enough that they might be in Boy Scouts, partly, I guess I'll admit, and maybe this is just me being selfish, just like, it seems like a lot of work and time. Like, I know how much time my dad put in, which I'm grateful for. That's how you should do it. And my thought was like, if I put my boys in Boy Scouts, which I know they would love and would be good for them and I would love it, I would feel like I'm not doing right if I wasn't as involved as my dad was. So I just wasn't sure I wanted to. I felt like it'd be a commitment that I wasn't sure I wanted to. So I just never did.
Yep.
Whatever. And some part of me still kicks myself to this day. Like, why was I that way? I don't know. I feel like they missed out on a lot of good, fun stuff that I got to experience as a kid. But we did go camping a lot. Our church did the yearly camp out, and I think we never missed one. If we did, other than the whole church just didn't do it for some reason, there was a few years that we kind of stopped doing it. And we always went, if we had a nursing baby, we went camping in the tent, like everybody, you know, most of the other people at the time. And we were like, whatever, we love tent camping, we're going to do it. So we did that. But when my oldest son was 10, 11, 12, something like that, Linda read the book Hatchet. So it's a fictional story, complete fiction. I remember reading it when I was in school, in grade school. Or the teacher read it to us, but it's a book. We watched the movie. I know they made a movie out of it in the 70s, I think. But it's a kid. His dad, Rich, goes on business trips all over the world. He has a house in Canada, whatever. And so he was going to be in Canada, and then they were going to go on vacation. And so he had his 14-year-old son, who was the main character of the book, fly on this little tiny airplane from wherever they were in rural America to this camping place in the middle of the nowhere in Canada. So it's this 14-year-old kid and the pilot. The pilot has a heart attack and dies in midair. And they're over the Canadian wilderness, a million miles from nowhere. And the kid's like, and all he has with him is the clothes on his back and a hatchet that he had just got, that his dad gave him for his birthday or whatever, 14th birthday. And so he's like, he's using the radio, help, help, nothing. And he takes the, know the word. What's that?
Yoke.
I was going to say steering wheel. Anyway. He saw a giant lake, and he's like, I guess that's the best place to try to crash or land. So he aimed for the lake, whatever, he survived, got out, swam to shore, and survived for 40 days or something to that, around there. And so it's all of his adventures, trying to not die from the wild animals and trying to find food. And
not die.
Right. Number one goal, don't die. And so it was a really fun, super adventurous book. And eventually he gets rescued because there was some kind of thing on the airplane signaling where the location was. Something.
Transponder.
Linda read this book to our boys. And not too long after that, Chris comes up to me. He's like, Dad, I want to go survival hunting. And we all we bring with is a hatchet. We just go into the woods and survive for days.
Oh, so was that the inspiration for the Wisconsin trip you guys did then?
Well, that was like a later version of a similar. Okay. Yeah, that wasn't the first one.
Okay.
So I'm like, that's cute, I guess. I am not doing that. Like, what are you talking about?
Let's camp in the backyard, son. How about that?
I'm great going deep into the woods, building our own shelter, but I'm bringing food. I'm not going to. What are we going to eat? Squirrels, I guess? I don't know.
Oh, man.
I've never been hunting. The only wild animal, or I guess any animal that I've ever killed was a bird once. And I felt bad afterward. Like I have no objection to hunting. I would love to go, but no one that I know or in my family has ever taken me or gone. So I just, it wasn't a thing in my family. So my first, I was like, whatever, you're nuts. Like, we're not going to go into the woods with a hatchet and see if we don't die of starvation. So he's like, oh, come on, I really want it. It'd be fun. But then I was thinking about it at work. I'm like, okay, maybe we could do something similar, bring food, obviously. And the more I thought about it, the more I got ideas like, okay, this could be fun. We're going to bring a tarp, bring some ropes, and some food, and a hatchet, whatever. Everybody, each kid can get a hatchet or a machete or whatever. I'm like, that's plenty. I can make a tent. I can do like a bare minimal. We didn't even bring tent stakes. We had to cut them from wood. That was fun, you know. And so we did that, and I'm thinking, like, but where are we going to go? You can't just go somewhere and chop trees down and to make tent poles.
Yeah.
You just can't do that. And I'm like, well, if there was a place we could go. And then I'm like, oh, my aunt's farm. Way at the other end of the field from her house, there was a creek and some woods, and we hung out there a lot as kids. I'm like, and I went camping with a friend there once. I'm like, perfect. Nobody's going to care if we cut down a few small trees or whatever.
Yep.
So we did that. And all the other thing I did is I went and bought a paper target of a deer and a turkey. I'm like, okay, when you guys shoot, you have to. Then I went and hit them in the woods. And if you guys find the turkey and kill them, you get some hot dogs.
Turkey
so
dogs.
We'll pretend. And I invited my brother with, and he brought a bow and arrow. And so that was cool. And we even said, like, okay, you don't get the bow and arrow until you, quote unquote, make them. You have to cut something that you can turn into a bow and arrows. And then once they're good enough, we'll exchange them and give you the real ones.
Nice.
Something that actually works, you know. So anyway, it was really fun. That was the time that I realized that I'm still afraid of the dark, even as an adult. I thought I was over this. It just depends on where you are.
Yes.
It's not the darkness necessarily. So again, so we brought this tarp. And I figured out, okay, we'll just tie a rope between two trees, throw it over, pup tent, you know, triangle shape.
Yep.
Good enough, just to keep the rain off us. That's all I was worried about.
Yeah.
Bugs were an issue, but they weren't bad. One of the kids had a terrifying experience with a giant moth. Flew in right in front of his face, and, screaming. And so we got through that. Finally, time to go to sleep. And this is the places that we went camping, for the most part, they have a light somewhere.
Yeah.
You can go walk to the latrine or the outhouse, and there's a dim light somewhere that'll light your way. There was no moonlight. It was pitch black, like absolute pitch black, once we turned all the lights off, put the fire out. And so at one end of the tent, so there's two open ends.
Yeah.
At one end, we had the cooler. I'm like, okay, that feels like a barrier. And at the other end, there was just nothing. And I'm like, where am I going to sleep? Like, can I really ask one of my kids to sleep at the open end while I...
Save me, son. Something between me and the wild and the wilderness.
And I was like, seriously, that was a struggle in my mind. I'm like, I don't know. I can't. I can't do this. I'm here to show him how to be a man. So I slept on the outside end. Our oldest son, I had him sleep next to the cooler on the other end. Again, it was felt like a little bit of a barrier. And so
you should have thrown your brother at the end.
Well, he wasn't there. He came the second night.
Oh, okay.
We did three nights, and he came the second night. I know. But we were sitting around the fire the second night. Again, if you're within, you know, a few feet of the fire, you can see faces. But if you look past or behind you, you can't see anything. It's pitch black. And we heard something. The only thing I could figure out was a deer hoof hitting the ground.
Yeah.
Like, okay, deer don't want to be near us. They're going to run away if they get close.
Yep.
So anyway, first night, lay down, turn the flashlight off. There's like literally nothing between me and the dark abyss of who knows what. And I'm thinking like, okay, what is there? There's no bears. They're not this far south.
Yep.
The biggest thing is a deer. And again, they do not have any interest in bothering people. They don't want to be near us. Skunk, I guess. Raccoon.
Just because, yeah, skunk could be messy. Yeah,
that would be terrible.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, okay, nothing wants to eat me out here. I know that. Then all of a sudden I hear grass rustling like really close.
Squirrel.
I don't know. The problem is you can't see. Yeah. And I can only imagine what it is. And I don't like that. I guess I could have turned on a flash, but I was just trying to ignore it. And then it's like, okay, it's circling the tent, whatever it is. Like, oh my. And it was hard. It was really rough night. Didn't like it. So the next night, I had brought more tarps than we really needed. So I'm like, all right, I'm putting up a wall on every side. And the ends of the tent that were close to the ground, I staked them hard all the way down into the ground. I didn't want any gaps. And that was fine. That's all I needed was a tarp between me and the scary things.
Yeah.
It's like a security blanket, I guess. If you cover yourself with a blanket when you're four, the monsters can't get you.
They can't see you.
As far as the impact on raising my boys and teaching them how to be men. Sorry, not toxic masculinity. If anyone thinks that, that's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
If that's even a thing. It's just called sin. Sorry. Anyone can do it, not just men. Right. There wasn't really, I didn't have much of that in mind. It just, I feel like it's good to have adventures.
Yeah.
To do things that you haven't done before and just like, we're just going to do this. We're not going to die. Even though I kind of thought I was a little bit. And they, all four of them.
I thought Mike died.
All four of the boys were like, they were like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Great. They had no reservations or fears or doubts that we could do this. And, you know. Again, my oldest, he was like, let's just go with a hatchet. Don't even bring food. I'm like, okay, nope. You want to do that when you're an adult someday, go for it. And again, it was just a way to just connect with the boys, spend time with them. I didn't really teach them how to tie knots or... We did learn. Actually, my brother, he built, on that trip, he built a grass hut. And his intention was to sleep in it, but it turned out to be too small. Just didn't really, and it kind of was sagged in more than we expected.
Yeah.
But he learned that from a YouTube video, and it was actually really cool. I've always thought, like, what is a grass hut going to do for you? Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Well, how it works is if you ever use really long grass, which this place was full of long grass. Nobody had been here for a while, and nobody was cutting the grass. So it was above waist high. So what you do is you make a frame, like a dome frame out of long branches, sticks, whatever, like some really long ones that bend enough. And then you do circles around the frame.
To reinforce,
You got horizontal circles starting at the top. And then as they go down, they get bigger, larger diameter. And then you start at the bottom and you tie really long bundles of grass. And then you go up higher and they overlap. And if it's a 100-year rainstorm, then it's probably not going to help much.
Right.
But for most rain, the grass...
It hits the grass and just runs down the
grass. It hits the grass and runs down to the ground. Yeah, and you stay dry. Even though it's not airtight, waterproof, it diverts the rain away down to the ground. So, like, whereas a tarp, that's waterproof. So I had never, like, oh, that is a really cool concept. That, yes, you can stay dry under grass if you do it right.
Yeah.
So, and he had got that from a YouTube video, I think. But that was cool. We actually did it, and we built it. And
so your kids, I mean, I bet they're not afraid to camp. And right. When they're adults, because I have this theory, my dad and I didn't really do anything like that. But I can attribute some of the things in my life that I know I'm not afraid to do. They're very simple, but they're like, I know this is all you got to do this. He was a farmer, and so he was always having to fix his own stuff. So many, many times I went with him to parts stores, to the farm equipment dealerships and stuff like that to get parts for tractors and combines and stuff like that. I have no issue with that because I saw him do it a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the theory I kind of go with is that I think anything that sons see their dads do, and especially if they see it do it more than once, they're probably not afraid to do it themselves.
Right, right.
So they feel like, oh, yeah, I know how this goes. I've seen dad do this. You just do this and this and this, at least as a starting point, but at least they're not afraid. They've been encouraged, which is one of the things that fathers are supposed to, that's in Raising Modern Day Knights, they talk about that mothers nurture. The thing sons get from dads is how to be courageous, is courage.
Mm-hmm.
And courage, as one movie said, it's like, remember, without fear, there's no courage.
Right. It's not courage to sit on the couch and watch TV. That's not hard or scary.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's not scary, courage doesn't apply.
Yep. Courage is doing what needs to be done, even in the face of fear.
Right. And I've heard people talk about, what's the difference between courage and stupidity?
Might be a fine line.
Right. And people, I've seen jokes about it on Facebook. Like, you know, even in the face of fear, you go forward. Like, well, that could be courage or stupidity.
Yeah.
Both of those apply. But I think the real difference is the motivation.
Yeah.
If you're doing it to show off.
Yeah, that's probably stupidity.
It's probably stupidity. If you're doing it to save a life.
Yeah. We never did anything that adventurous with I and my three oldest boys. And I kicked myself a little bit because, you know, we had three boys in a row, then the two girls. So the three older boys, it was kind of the four of us if we were going to go do something. You know, we'd go shoot things, and the kids had air rifles and BB guns and then graduated to firearms, did firearm safety and all of that, which I encourage anybody to do. It's just basic safety to know how to use the thing. It's a tool. Tools don't kill people. It's the people using the tools that kill people.
Right.
So knowing how to handle a thing. I mean, you think about 150 years ago, you know, people living out in the boondocks, there's nobody around. It's like, you need to know how to handle a firearm.
Right, yeah.
For food or for protection, either one. But if you're around them and you taught how to use them properly, it's just like any power tool or anything else. They can be dangerous when misused.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's something everybody should consider doing as firearm safety for their kids, just for the familiarity with it.
Yep.
But we had lots of fun shooting things.
Talking about the like firearm safety and whether you're going to ever plan on using guns much. This is a story to kind of make the point. It's a weird situation. Probably never going to happen for almost everybody on the planet. But can't remember the guy's name, but it was several months ago. An actor. Somebody handed him a gun.
Oh, yeah.
On stage.
Yeah.
Which he was supposed to point and click. And there, that was, you know, in the movie, he was shooting somebody.
Yeah.
Killed the other person because it had a bullet in it and it was a real gun.
Yeah.
I, to this day, can't remember, like, did a real gun get into the props department with a bullet in it?
Yeah.
What in the world? But different podcasts I was listening to, they were discussing that. This guy on the show, he says, I have a gun. I practice shooting all the time. I know gun safety. I do it a lot. This is my kind of a lifestyle for me. And he said, when somebody hands me a gun, without thinking, I check to see if it's loaded and I check the safety. It just happens.
Right.
Now, not saying everybody should be that way exactly to that level. He said, but what if he had gun safety experience? Like, I don't care if it's a prop. I'm going to check it. He didn't know the difference between a real gun and a prop. And maybe they're so similar that you can't tell. I have no idea. They got to look real, at least, obviously, for a good movie. But anyway, his point was he had no familiarity with guns, I'm assuming. I guess we can't say that for sure. But point being, if somebody hands him a proper, a real gun, if it looks and feels like a real gun, he's going to treat it like a real gun.
Yeah.
Now, of course, one of the rules is don't point it at somebody unless you intend to shoot them.
Yeah.
So I guess that's true for a prop, too, because you intend to pretend
shoot them. Yeah, you never point a firearm at anything that you don't intend to shoot.
Right, right. Either way, point being, like, if he had some familiarity with guns, there's a much greater chance this would not have happened. Like, he might have been like, hold on, there's a bullet in here. Like, how did he know? Because he checked. Like,
right.
I don't know, but I thought that was a very good point.